You are listening to Fanther Tracks.
It's time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Cannon Fodder.
Grab your beat marks, it's time to take cover as we unleash the cannon fodder of the Star Wars Galaxy of Literature. In this special edition of the show, my co-host Mark Ebold talks to Alex Segura about his new Star Wars novel, Poe Dameron Freefall, out now from Disney Lucasfilm Press. The young adult novel follows a teenage Poe setting out in the galaxy, where he meets up with the Rise of Skywalker's Zori and the criminal organisation the Spice Runners of Kijimi. Segura is a co-president of Archie Comics, which is currently experiencing a tremendous growth in both its comics and television output. He's also the award-winning writer for his Pete Fernandez mystery series. Let's go over to Mark and Alex.
Poe Dameron Freefall, how did this project come to you? How did this come onto your radar?
That's a great question. Mike Siglain, who's the head of Lucasfilm Publishing, is someone I've known a long time, an old friend. We worked together at DC. And, we've always stayed in contact. He followed my career. I followed his. And I just announced that my Private Eye series, which is set in my hometown of Miami, was ending. It's gotten a lot of acclaim, some award nominations, a lot of buzz, and I was moving on to do something else. So I announced it that, this book was going to be the end and the fifth one. And he shot me an email shortly after that and said, have you ever considered doing any Star Wars? And, that's a very general question. And I took it very generally. I wasn't sure what he meant. So I said, yes. Yes, I've always considered it because I love Star Wars and it would be awesome to do anything in that space. And so then we started talking and he drilled down a bit and said, we're looking to do a Poe Dameron YA novel. And it would basically be his origin story and kind of, respond, basically set up a lot of things that you would then see in Rise of Skywalker. So, once I had that general idea, I really got to dive into that and kind of figure out what story I wanted to tell within the framework of what they were looking for the book to be.
Yeah, because obviously, as you say, this is leading into story-wise, obviously, it's queuing you up for what you see, especially in Rise of Skywalker, given Zori and Kijimi and all those connections. And also there's a framework to build from and waypoints to hit. How much scope then did you have to build up the story to your satisfaction within that sort of framework?
When you go into writing IP, intellectual property, or characters that are not your own, I always go in expecting the rights holder to be to be strict, to say, this is what you can do, this is what you can't do, this is what we need you to do. I write for Archie, I work at Archie, and you can only do so much with those characters. You can change the dynamic they're in and you can change elements, but Archie still has to be Archie, and Jughead's not going to become a vegan. There are certain things that are just going to be what they are. But I was, I don't want to say surprised. I was so happy when, I had talked to the story group. I had the initial conversations with story group. And they basically said, we want you to bring your voice to this. We want you to introduce new characters, introduce new elements. And these are, these are the beats we think you need to hit. But how you connect those dots and what you add along the way is on you. And that was really cool because I saw the whole story and, the readers can be the final judge. I saw the whole story as a heist novel. It's a classic subgenre of crime fiction, the heist novel, where, an unknowing youngster gets pulled in to be the driver by this jaded gang of criminals. And that felt like such a natural springboard for Poe, who's impetuous and emotional and headstrong, but also very loyal and calculating and gifted. And so I just kind of backtracked and thought, well, what would he be like at 16? How would the Poe we met in Force Awakens be different and still feel like Poe? So I felt like I had a lot of wiggle room, and I wouldn't even call it wiggle room because that implies some level of constraint. I think sure. It was a pretty open playing field, and I was really happy to have that opportunity. It's a huge honor.
It struck me reading it that the book and Poe's journey was kind of similar to Han Solo's in Solo: A Star Wars Story. You got a young kid, impetuous, clearly got talent but hasn't reached the boundaries of it yet, but kind of thinks beyond what he can actually do. And there's a touch of that in this book as well, is there is in Solo. And people do draw the parallels between Poe and Han, and obviously Wedge and Poe as well, because of the piloting stuff. But did that strike you at all? Because within a year of each other, you've had these two sort of origin stories almost of these kind of similar characters going on journeys where they're, like I say, they're sort of beyond their skills almost.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of parallels between Han and Poe, and I tried to be mindful of that, and I think we all were, you know, in discussions about this story. But I think the big difference is Han, you know, remained a scoundrel. You know, mm-hmm. he obviously did things, you know, against the Empire and helped his friends, whereas Poe is kind of the inverse. You know, he can do kind of shady, scoundrel-like things. That's kind of his persona, but he's still mainly a part of the Resistance. You know, he's still part of, you know, that's where he's entrenched. And I think this story is very much about pushing back against destiny and then accepting destiny, your destiny, and making it your own. And that's, I don't want to spoil the end of the story, but by the end of it, you realize where he's headed, and that path, even though it's not short, it's going to be a long way until he becomes the man we meet in Force Awakens. It's clearer now. So I did see the similarities, and I did try to kind of make Free Fall stand on its own and be its own thing, not so much just, you know, Solo Part 2. I feel like it's tonally different, but there are some parallels there.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I suppose if you draw it out, I guess Cassian's almost a better comparison point, given his association with his particular era and rebellion and his dedication to it, which is where Poe finds himself later on. Yeah. There was some poignant stuff at the beginning, obviously, without giving too much away to people who haven't read it. Poe's mother has passed away. Difficult relationship with his father, who's kind of stricken with grief. How did he tackle that element of it? Because there was quite a sad, sorrowful sort of tone to that that sets off another young character on a journey in a different way to Luke, and a different way to Han, a different way to Cassian, who'd been in his war since he was 6 years old. You know, they're all off on these journeys, but Poe's was quite unique in that sense.
Oh, good. I'm glad it felt that way. I think, you know, a lot of Star Wars mythology is about fathers and sons. And I really, you know, I wanted to nod to that. Obviously, Cass and Poe, their relationship is felt throughout the book, but I also wanted it to be about Poe and Shara Bay. So I felt like Greg Rucka did a fantastic job fleshing out those characters in Shattered Empire, the miniseries he did with Marvel, kind of bridging the gap, you know, kind of setting the stage after Return of the Jedi. And I really wanted to honor all the work done in Poe's space, you know, as much as I could, and tie it all together, you know. So if I was going to write the beginning of Poe's adventures, I wanted it to not only be a great adventure, but reflect the things that are coming down the pike, you know, or were before, like Shattered Empire or Charles Soule's great Poe Dameron comics, or, you know, things that Rebecca Roanhorse mentions in Resistance Reborn. So that's I think, your first responsibility when you're writing in canon. You know, you have to connect the dots, but also not make it feel perfunctory. So yeah, the tone is a little somber at first, but I think you see Poe kind of as this little crack of light shining through. You know, he's been through some dark times. He's lost his mother, and that weighs on him. He loves his father, but his father is also, you know, hampering him. And I tried to kind of think back to what it was like for me as a teenager and what it's been like for teenagers I know. And, you know, sometimes there are things you can't just be told what to do. You know, you have to experience them on your own. So even though Poe, who's a pretty smart kid, knows there's risk involved, he wants to experience the risk, the pain, the failure. And Kes, like, having gone through that and having gone through the tragedy as an adult, just doesn't want his son to feel that. And he also doesn't want to lose his son. He doesn't want to be living alone on Yavin 4, a widower, you know, the father of a child who's gone, you know. So I think I wanted to really bring those to the forefront, those conflicts, and then set him off on this journey with those in mind and knowing that they would get resolved to some degree later, even though, you know, there's some stuff left dangling, because I think there are more stories to tell in that space.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And what you say is interesting, because you can look at Luke with his journey in A New Hope. It was almost the circumstances that pushed him to go, because he had that loyalty to his family. But in here, Lulo, the Duros, who sort of almost says, you know, you've got to live this life. You've got to experience this. You've got to figure this out for yourself. It's almost like he saw the destiny in front of Poe more than his dad, who was kind of stricken by grief because he was too close to it, I guess.
Yeah, and Lulo was great to write, and I'm glad I wove him into the story, because, you know, he's not Poe's dad, but he's like his very, very thoughtful uncle. And he sees Shara Bay and Poe, and he knows, look, no matter what I do, I'm not going to be able to hold this guy down, hold this kid back. He's an adventurer. He needs to feel this. And you see it in that scene on Yavin where they're, you know, Poe is basically asking him, what would my mom do? What would you tell my mom in this situation? And Lulo can't lie about it.
Yeah.
And that's a turning point in the book where Poe's like, okay, you've said enough and I'm out the door. And I thought it was really a tough spot for Lulo because his loyalty is to Kess and he knows that he should just try to keep Poe in line. But he also can't lie to this kid who's the son of his closest friend. So, you know, that to me, the character to me is where you get the best conflict when you're just putting two characters in the space and letting them interact and seeing where they kind of play off each other, as opposed to like over plotting and kind of moving pieces around. But you definitely need to do that anyway. But the writing, for me, it gets really good when you put two people together and see how they kind of play off each other.
For everything in one location. Daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds. Bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
We're talking about people playing off each other. Obviously, Zori's as much a part of this book almost as Poe is. Did you enjoy detailing her earlier years as well, before the helmet?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just give you a brief aside. As I was finishing up the book, obviously Rise of Skywalker came out and I got to see it. I have two young children, so I don't get out to the movies much.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't then, pre-pandemic, and definitely not now. But, you know, I treated myself to a little business movie viewing and I watched it. And, you know, it was such a great, it's a great film. It's also great because that's when it finally hit me that I was doing this, you know, because so many of the questions that spring out of the film are answered or at least addressed in this book. So it was like, wow, okay, people are going to watch this movie and then they're going to see this book is coming and they just go hand in hand, which is very cool. And one of my favorite things was Zori, because you see her in the film, she's one of the coolest elements of the movie. But in terms of screen time, she's only up there for, what, 10, 15 minutes,
yeah,
arguably. And she's got that same Boba Fett quality. Like, she has a few more lines. You know, she's mysterious, she's cool, she's badass, and she's interesting. And so I thought, well, how do I show her becoming this character? And with her, it was a much wider landscape because she's not established as much as Poe. So Poe, I knew there were certain things you had to say. And, you know, you had to kind of present a Poe that people knew. With Zori, I didn't have that same weight. And so it was a much wider canvas to play with. And that was fun and interesting. And to be able to lay down her history and the hierarchy of the Spice Runners, you know, and introduce characters like Tommaso and the other Spice Runners that Poe runs with when he joins up with them. It just really was such a cool thrill to be the one that got to add that history and background to this character that I think for sure is going to last a long time and we'll see again in other canon novels or other adventures. And so to be able to be the person that kind of drove that origin was amazing. You know, and obviously doing that for Poe is huge, but, you know, Zori was like a blanker slate, I guess.
You've said, obviously, as a writer doing your own unique individual stuff, where you take the characters and the plot is where you want to take it. With an IP, you have got, not constraints, that's an unfair phrase, but you know what I'm saying. There's sort of levels and boundaries, yeah, that you want to work towards. Do you enjoy that in the sense of, for example, in the book you mentioned, obviously, Shara passing, you mentioned the Y-Wing, you meet Babu Frick, you know, you're touching on waypoints within the book. Do you enjoy weaving those in? Is that a fun thing to do?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I love writing my own novels because I can do whatever I want. I like writing comics of my own because I can do whatever I want in collaboration with other talented people. I like writing IP comics because, you know, it's just a different puzzle, you know, and with Star Wars, it was, you're playing a puzzle with, you know, our modern mythology, basically. You're putting together a story. You know, you're taking all these pieces that are kind of floating around and connected to each other and adding another connection. And then also you have to make that beat interesting and engaging and entertaining all on its own. It can't feel like, you know, this is just, like I said before, like just checking off a list or perfunctory. It's got to feel like Free Fall on its own has to be an adventure. Like, if someone doesn't know Poe or doesn't really know the intricacies of Star Wars, you want to still be able to hand it to them and say, hey, this will be fun. You'll be entertained by this and it'll make you want to be a part of this universe. So yeah, I always see it as a challenge. I see it as, you know, can I kind of immerse myself in this world, not as a fan, but as a researcher and writer, and then find little spaces where I can, you know, extrapolate that into something bigger. And so that's kind of what I did. I became a student of Poe And I really just immersed myself in Star Wars, you know, more than I would do as a fan where I'm watching it and being entertained, but, you know, much more as a student and researching and kind of finding things that are interesting. And I hope that the fans get that, because there are a lot of fun Easter eggs, not just for Poe, but like characters that show up that you wouldn't expect, or ship classes, or, you know, races that, you know, I tried to make it engaging for not only the newcomer, but also the hardcore fan. And I think my high point in the whole editing process was when someone from Story Group commented, "Hey, this is a deep cut," like in a complimentary way, like, yeah. Wow, I was not expecting to see that. And so that feels good when you know, like, you're succeeding on multiple levels.
Something that I found interesting that I didn't expect when I saw Rise of Skywalker, my sense was that the Spice Runners on Kijimi were a local gang, a planetary gang. They weren't a bigger concern. And obviously through Force Awakens, you meet Kanji Club, you meet the Guavian Death Gang. In the original trilogy, you had Jabba's underground stuff. You know, there's stuff being brought into Rogue One and other films, obviously Solo being in the underworld. And then you expand upon the Spice Runners as being a larger group than I certainly ever considered it to be. How interesting was it then to sort of develop that little strata of that particular group?
Oh, that was cool. That was, you know, I'm a crime writer and I've always been obsessed with science fiction, but also obsessed with organized crime. So the idea of writing a crime novel in space with undertones of organized crime, or being able to kind of establish some of the hierarchy of the crime of the underworld in space in Star Wars, you know, was just candy for me. So ironically, when I got the call, I had been rereading this mammoth book called Five Families. And it's really this epic, you know, history of organized crime or the mafia in the last two centuries. And I'd also just finished reading McMafia, which is a great story about, you know, organized crime in the post-Soviet Union, in Eastern Europe, and how, you know, we've got these oligarchies. And, you know, now I'm rambling, but you know, I was in the mindset of crime in a macro sense, you know, how to present it, how do these people play off each other. And so the idea that the Empire is almost like this extreme government that falls, but had everything kind of in check. And then the Republic steps in, and while they're quote unquote they're the good guys, they might not be as good at keeping this in check because they're trying to just survive. You know, they're trying to get their footing. They're trying to do the right thing. And so now crime is on the upswing. And so that was interesting to play with all of that, the kind of the geopolitical side of it, while still telling a really fun, focused YA story in terms of Poe and what was going on. So it was a blast. I loved that part of it.
That's a good point. I watched the last episode of Lower Decks today, and which is fantastically fun Star Trek animated show, obviously.
Yeah.
There was a line in there when they basically, and it made me think of the New Republic more than the Federation, when they say the Federation's great at doing things for the first time, but the maintenance is terrible. They can't maintain anything. You know, the packlets go and change their ways, and different species go and change things up. And because the galaxy is so huge, they might not get back for 70 years, so they just don't know. And it just kind of reminded me, especially your story, which is, what, about 14, 15 years after Jedi, that you're sort of midway between Jedi and Force Awakens. So you're in an era where the New Republic is very much changing its MO, and it's trying to demilitarize, and different things are happening. And that must have been interesting to sort of be in that area, because nobody else has written in that particular time period, have they?
Yeah, it felt like a particularly fertile area. I mean, I think you have some comics and some novels set in that space, but from what I could tell, and from, you know, my research, I had a lot of room to establish things, which was cool. And just say, you know, the Spice Runners are a big deal. They are, you know, they're not the main organized crime group, but they are on the rise, and they're definitely like playing in this space in the wake of things that happened in Jedi and after. That was definitely a benefit.
If fate was fortunate enough to throw another Star Wars project your way without telling me anything, if something's on the table or not, where would you want to tell a story? What era would you like to pitch your story in?
You know, I would definitely like to continue this Poe saga. I think there's a lot of room there. I mean, obviously, look, if you watch the movie, you know that there was a break between Zori and Poe. And I hope that the dynamic as it was presented in the novel kind of trumped expectations, or at least surprised people who went in thinking it was going to be something, but it actually is something else. So I'd like to continue that story, or at least Poe's story, or what would happen to him on his way to Force Awakens. But I'd also love to do an Obi-Wan story, like a young Obi-Wan story before he even become, you know, like what made him decide to become a Jedi, and, you know, what was that challenge, like, and you know, finding himself and deciding this is what he wants to do. This, like, Obi-Wan is such an integral part of the whole saga. You know, John Jackson Miller wrote that great novel about Obi-Wan, and I think it's one of my favorite Star Wars novels, but I think there's room for more, too. So, yeah.
And finally, what else is coming from your keyboard in the imminent future?
I've got a few comic book things that are going to be announced soon, and my next novel, my next crime novel, is a standalone. It's called Secret Identity. It's coming out from Flatiron Books. It's a story about a woman who moves from Miami to New York to work in comics in 1975. So she takes a job as a secretary in a fictional comic book publisher. And she obviously does it because she's a fan. She wants to work in comics. She wants to write comics. But she hits the wall. You know, her boss doesn't let her pitch. She's not given these opportunities, and she's feeling, you know, really bummed out. So a colleague approaches her and says, I'm going to write this story. It's going to be published. I need your help because it's a crazy deadline. Would you ghostwrite it? And so she ghostwrites it, and it becomes this huge hit, the biggest hit the company's ever had. She is obviously anonymous. And then her collaborator ends up dead. And so she has to find a way to solve this murder and reclaim her kind of stake in this character. And there's a lot more going on. There are a few other cool wrinkles we're going to announce as we get closer. But I get to write everything I love. I love comics. I love murder mysteries. I love amateur investigators. Like, she's not a PI. She's not, you know, she's never held the gun. She's not a fighter. And I really like writing a character that is totally different from my series character, Pete Fernandez. So it's been a trip, and I think people will really like it, I hope.
Well, that sounds fascinating. Mid-70s Marvel DC era, it's got that kind of vibe. It sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it's interesting because comics hasn't always been this vibrant, like, fertile area for people to, you know, there have been many times in the industry's life where people were like, yeah, comics are dead. This is just something I'm going to do until I write a novel or write a TV show or go off and do something else. And I think 1975 was definitely a low point for the industry. It was right before comic shops became a thing and the newsstand was fading away. And so it was very much a dark time for comics. So it's been an interesting period to explore and talk to people that worked there around that time and really get a sense of what it was like to be a woman working in comics around then. So it's been cool to write.
It sounds fantastic. I look forward to that very much. And thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll talk again in the future.
I hope so. Thanks so much.
All the best. Brilliant. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Cannon Fodder. If you want to be part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit fantatracks.com and download the Fantatracks app to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@fantatracks.com. And remember to comment, like, share and subscribe on all our social medias at Fantatracks. Leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcaster or smart speaker of choice.
Coming up next on Fantatracks Radio, it's Making Tracks.